Hello, welcome to the Transmedia Podcast. I'm Natalie Rios, and today we have with us Clay Ewing, creator of the game Unsavory, a game to raise awareness about the lack of paid sick day for restaurant workers. Welcome, Clay. Thank you very much for being in our podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. So to begin, can you explain us what is Unsavory and how do you play it?
Sure. So Unsavory is a mobile game available on Google Play and the iOS App Store. It's kind of like a lemonade stand game or an entrepreneur game where you make orders for people building burritos, and then you take that money home. The change is that instead of being an entrepreneur where you make more money the more things you serve, is that you get paid minimum wage. So the game looks at how long you worked, and then it translates that into $8.15 an hour, which is Florida's minimum wage, and then you get paid. So each day you go to work, you put together different orders for customers, and then you go home, and you have, you know, your life in your apartment, which is pretty much you can sleep and go back to work. It's pretty minimal. The change comes in the second week of work, and you get sick. So when you get sick, there's a new mechanic added of trying to hide your sickness from your boss, and that's done through sneezing. So there's a timer, and the sicker you get, the quicker the timer is. And then it builds up, and if you don't wipe your nose, then you sneeze all over the food, and your boss sends you home. So that's the basic gameplay.
That's really good. So why this project? Where did the idea come from? And why in a game?
Yeah, so the original, like the conception of the idea came from my work with Rock United. Rock United is an advocacy group for restaurant workers that started after 9/11. And they have multiple issues that they're concerned with for restaurant workers, but one of them is living wages and paid sick days. And so originally I worked with them developing their mobile application for finding – so they have a guide for ethical eating that was originally just a PDF that they distribute, but we turned it into a mobile app. So it was through that process of kind of coming up with, you know, an app that was a guide that rated restaurants on how they treat their workers, that I really kind of came to learn about the fact that like 90% of surveyed restaurant workers don't have access to paid sick days. And that one kind of struck me both if I look at it from a conservative standpoint or a liberal point of view. There's multiple sides of the argument that are interesting, I think, and of concern. So if you just believe that people should be paid a living wage, then yeah, like they're not getting the right, you know, benefits. But it's also a public health concern because everybody eats out, or at least I think most people eat out. Yeah. And so would you want that person handling your food to be sick and they're paid so little without access to like taking a day off that they have to come into work? It's literally this forced situation. And so there's been like documented cases of like workers, going to work with like H1N1. And you know, so that's scary to me.
Yeah. Definitely.
And so I wanted to make a game that would put people in that situation so they could empathize with the worker. 'Cause I think it's really easy for someone to go, oh yeah, but I mean, like, I just wouldn't work. Like, if I was sick, I wouldn't go to work. And, well, yeah, but you have to pay bills.
Yeah.
And so if you can't pay your bills at the end of the month, you're, you know, you're either going to be out of electricity, you're going to get kicked out of your home, maybe you have dependents that, you know, rely on you for support. And so if you can't make ends meet, you know, that doesn't work. So you have to go to work. You're literally mandated to go to work while sick,
yeah.
And it creates that crisis.
Yeah, it's a moral choice they have. So
yeah.
that is what you're evoking in the game.
Right.
How do you work out the game mechanics to give this kind of pressure that the workers suffer and to make it engaging at the same time?
So I guess the first step was coming up with just a general idea of what it would be like. And I wanted to make something that would be replayable. I think that, especially in the space of transformational games or serious games, social impact games, whatever you call them, being replayable is really important. So I felt like an arcade-style game would be good. And I like the games like the Hot Dog Stand and the Lemonade Stand, and those games where you serve people food. It's a pretty proven game mechanic that people seem to like. I thought I could go with that to start, right? And then start adding in the other pieces of the system that would then turn it into a more like critical piece. I guess the first piece of that is getting minimum wage, which always in playtests, watching people play it, they get really upset when they see that they did like really well, but they still get paid the same amount if they did like a decent job. And then the second part is when you go home at the end of 5 days, you get basically you have your bills pop up on the screen with your paycheck. And so you have to figure out, you know, what you're going to pay and what you have remaining. So the billing system, so you get your paycheck, which, you know, is I think like near $100 or so. And then you have your bills that you can look at. So there's a stack of bills and you click on them and you can see what you need to pay. There's rent, electricity, and a couple other things. So it was that idea of paying your bills was taken from Spent, which is an online game where you try to, you know, make ends meet at the poverty level. But to kind of ground the game in real life data, there was this article in the Huffington Post, and they had leaked, it was from McDonald's. So Visa and McDonald's did, or Visa Consulting came in to help their workers set financial goals. And so Visa was like, okay, so like, what do you make? And like, okay, well, let's figure out how to save some money. And they came up with this worksheet. And so they had like their generalized numbers. So what would rent be? So this isn't like metropolitan area. It's more just like average rent, average everything. And in that, they actually said in order to save, you need to get a second job. Which, considering that, you know, working in a restaurant is like a 40-hour a week job, and you have to get a second job just to save, you know, for your future, seems kind of insane. And so I just took that leaked document that had those numbers of what Visa said would be, you know, suitable for a restaurant worker for their bills, and I used those numbers. So I wanted to ground it in a bit of, you know, like somewhat realism, because obviously, like, the rent is way higher if you live in New York or in like Miami or London or Los Angeles, any major metro, compared to like Des Moines, right? So you pay those bills, and then that starts the critique of the system. And so first you have to pay the bills, then you get sick, but before you get sick, there's a tip off. And you receive a letter in the mail from an organization. It's not Rock United, but it's kind of Rock United. So they say, by the way, just want to give you a heads up. There's a sickness going around. You know, be careful. And then you get sick, right? So it's immediately after that the mechanics introduced. So every week after that, you get another letter that kind of tells you more about the statistics in the paid sick days for restaurant workers. And then there's a Twitter campaign embedded within the game. So if you feel passionately about it, you can then tweet from the game, and there's a set of tweets that you can give out. And so I'm at the University of Miami as an assistant professor. And so I thought I might try to embed something that we can maybe study. The game actually randomly assigns you to a personality.
That's interesting.
I believe there's four or five personality types, and which really come down to arguments. So there's like a humanitarian that just wants, you know, everybody to have like equal access. There's a pro-business personality that gives you arguments based on businesses and so forth. So that when you go into the Twitter campaign, the messages that you see that you can tweet are based on whichever personality profile you were assigned. If you have the business profile, your tweet might be something about, like, in Connecticut, they passed a law for mandating paid sick days, and they actually saw that productivity for businesses went up. So it's actually a pro-business thing to do. If you're the humanitarian, it's just like, hey, like, healthcare is a human right, right? So, like, and so you can tweet all those things. There's also one condition where you get all of them, so you can see, like, every single type of argument, but, yeah.
And what do you do with the data? I mean, it was randomly assigned, and then were you able to see reactions?
So that's a funny thing. You know, there was, like, no marketing budget for Unsavory, so... I mean,
yeah, happens.
yeah. So, like, I don't think many people have really played it. And so I just monitor Twitter for people actually tweeting because I put in hashtags that respond to it. So I can just look it up. And so barely anybody has tweeted. And so I don't know if they haven't gotten far enough, they, you know, it's just not enough downloads. I have heard from people, though, that played through the game that they wanted to tweet, but their Twitter accounts link to their work, and they don't want to have political messages going out through their work account.
Yeah, I was going to say that sometimes when people play games, they don't want to link it to their social accounts.
Yeah,
so it's kind of tricky, especially if when it's criticism, then maybe they feel a little bit reluctant to do it. Is it possible to finish the game happily, or is it always a frustration at the end?
You can take one day off of work and do the rest of if you get through all the days without getting sent home sick and, like, you know, sending, like, half of your, like, you know, basically getting paid fully for those days, the game is winnable. So you can get to the end of the game. So the game's a month long, or virtually a month long. You can get to the end of the game, pay all your bills. You can get to the end of the game, not pay all your bills, or you just don't make it to the end of the game. So there's three outcomes.
That's interesting. How did you feel? Were you concerned that people might feel more frustrated than engaged? Or how do you balance that? Because that's something tricky, I think, for serious games. When you want to evoke a message that is kind of a critic, but then you want people to engage and have fun. So how do you balance that in
games like this? I aimed for fun first. And so the core mechanic is something that I know is fun to at least a certain group of people. And you can see that in the playtest, and people play through, and, like, if they get it, they like it, it's their type of game, and they enjoy that part of it. So then from there, it's just a layering process and seeing, like, how much you can throw in there for people to actually consume. So, like, the letters are the first layer of, like, actual advocacy, because before that you would just think, oh, this is just a game that's on the App Store for fun. You see the messaging, and then it's like, oh, okay, it's trying to tell me something. And then the call to action with tweeting is, like, seeing if we can go even one step further and then push them to do something that starts making their own, like, you know, it becomes a part of their personal life as they tweet from their personal account.
Yeah. You mentioned the playtest. Mm-hmm. How was the user testing for this project? And
So the game was made over the course of a year. Although that's not really an accurate time for development. So being at the University of Miami, I run a student lab called Nerd Lab. And so I work with students on the games. So one of the interesting things about Unsavory is, so I've shipped games before, but everybody else that worked on the project had never shipped a game. So I was, I programmed it and did the main design, but the art and the writing and the sounds, those were all people that were first time game makers.
Oh, wow.
So there was a lot of, you know, like mentorship there. Just learning in general, eventually part-time jobs. So it was a bit of a protracted period. So there was the internal playtest that we did, but then we would hold events, done like play days and like meetups and things like that, where we would just sit in front of people, have them play it. We also exhibited the game, so you know, places like Meaningful Play or Games Learning and Society, those types of conferences where you can get in front of people that are interested in it, and also the Serious Games Showcase. And then so you just, you know, just watch people play. So it's a bit of, we did more probably internal testing than external testing, but there was quite a bit of external play testing too.
Yeah, it's always tricky to incorporate also changes after the game is finished. That is challenging part.
And I think the main thing too was just finding balance. Because I pretty much knew that the mechanic works, the layers of advocacy aren't going to change really. I mean, that's a design decision that I was comfortable with just sticking to. But it was really just, is the first level easy? Is the tutorial good? Like, do people pick it up? Like, how many people just can't play this?
That is a good reflection on user testing, because you have to know what you can compromise or what can change and what cannot, and what do you believe about the game that works or not. What would you say that were the biggest challenges you faced? We talked a little bit of the difficult.
I mean, so it's kind of weird being in an academic setting. So, you know, there's challenges with like first time game makers because they're just learning the process. And there's things like, you know, setting up like a sprite sheet properly or something, you know, something really like super narrow, but it's just a thing that, you know, like pipelines. And then also like marketing and getting the game out there, it's not. It, like, we're not a company that's putting stuff out and trying to make money off it. I mean, it's free in the app stores, right? Because it's purely, it's like a public good. So that's also, it's a weird challenge because it's like, can this gain, like, critical mass, which it hasn't. So.
I think the marketing side of it, it's really challenging for everyone, and it needs a budget, and normally there's no budget for marketing. So,
And then the other thing that came up was I had one person tell me, like, this is really interesting as far as like long form, like documentary game journalism, but then it's like, what's the market for it? Like, even if you know, we had a big marketing budget, like, who would our target audience actually be? Like, right now, there really isn't, like, an audience, like, a built-in audience where you go, oh, I have this game that is, like, about this specific social issue. Who wants to play it? You know, and you have, like, hands. So that's another big challenge.
Yeah, that's true. Do you think it's important to define the audience before
doing it? I think so. Because you can't, you know, design in a vacuum. I mean, you can, but it's not really the best.
Yeah, it's not
option.
The best.
And I mean, for us, that audience was already kind of defined. It's like, you know, adults that can vote. So 18 plus, living in the U.S., and eat out. So that's
good.
You know, it's a lot of people, but, you know.
Yeah, that's true. But that's good.
Yeah.
What was your, what would you say is a key takeaway from developing this game?
That's a good one. key takeaway. I think that it's possible to make the games, but it's really, it goes back to that, like, long-form documentary-type game. Like, if you're just creating something that people that already understand the issue are going to be playing, and the people that you want to reach aren't playing it, then is that something that you should be doing? So from, like, a design perspective, it was a great project to work on and try to, like, come up and, like, kind of theorize, hey, can I get somebody to tweet about this? And how can I, like, kind of, like, put in, like, really specific messages throughout gameplay? But I did, the big takeaway is, yeah, let's aim for something that can be seen by people organically. So, like, things that people will naturally gravitate towards. So that's the goal now.
That's really good. That's true. Do you have any similar projects on the horizon?
We're working on a lot of stuff. We have, so there's a game that technically we've wrapped, but is we worked on for about a year, but we haven't released it yet because we have a formal evaluation plan on it. So it's a game about tanning, or basically trying to persuade people not to use tanning beds. So we've collected data and analyzed some of the data. We have a couple of, like, papers submitted, an abstract submitted for, like, conferences and journals. And there's more in the works. But that one is really interesting because with the target audience of women, it worked, basically. Like, way better than, like, a story or a website or just the facts. But with people, specifically men, that already tan, it had a boomerang effect. So it was actually, like, really bad for them. So there was this unintentional negative consequence, which is really interesting to me. And I think it's something that needs to be talked about within social impact games, which is, like, what if you're...
Yeah.
So, like, you know, you don't want to have people come away, like, I made an anti-smoking game and people wanted to smoke after playing it.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think a lot of the stuff that we put out, we think that it's doing one thing, but if it actually is doing something else, then we need to figure out, one, why it's doing that, and we also probably shouldn't release it if it is having, like, a bad effect.
Yeah, or the opposite effect.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So that was really interesting. We're also working on some documentary stuff. We're working on a game adaptation of a documentary about the desegregation of baseball. Been doing some advert games for a local tea company. Just all kinds of weird stuff.
But you normally work with factual projects, right?
Yeah, mainly. Yeah, yeah.
Do you think that games are a good format for to approach subject like this? I mean, as a closing thought, what is your view on creating awareness or making a change, educating people about issues with gamification?
I think it's good. I think we need to be careful about what we rush to turn into games and what we don't. I also think that over time, as more people are, as games become a dominant medium for people, like, the first thing that they look to instead of, like, movies or TV, that it is this place that we can embed a lot of social messages. but we just need to be careful about it and really think exactly what we're trying to do moving forward.
Yeah. I think several people agree on the same, and I do too, that it needs to be justified. It needs to have a motive. The gamification needs to evoke the message that you want and,
right.
Or transmit that. So it's a tricky thing to do, but
yeah,
worth doing. Well, Clay, thank you so much for making the time to share your insights and your experience with us. It was a great conversation. If you want to share how people can find you online or contact you online.
Sure. So everything I do, I try to put under Claytical. So my Twitter is at Claytical. My website is claytical.com. So that's like C-L-A-Y-T-I-C-A-L. And then our lab at the University of Miami is nerdlab.miami. And that'll take you to all the projects that we have worked on and are currently working on and all that stuff.
Excellent. I will share it
great.
As well in the publication.
Thank you.
So, great. Thank you very much again.
Yeah, thanks for having me.